Good afternoon. So last time we talked a bit about Unix, and we mentioned that, well, there's this one first Unix OS and then this whole bunch of variants of it, and therefore there was this standard for Unix. And well, they weren't actually concerned with did you implement the operating system the way the original Unix did. That's what XV6 was concerned with. That's not what they were concerned with. They were concerned with writing programs. So they just defined the standard interface. But that's what we're going to be talking about. And that's implemented by a lot of different OSs. And we'll talk about the typical original way of implementing it, even though that's not required. That, you know, we talked about like write as a system call, which is part of POSIX, but doesn't mean you need to make write work that way on something that implements POSIX, even though that's what XV6 does. And we in particular talked about how Unix deals with the interface for creating and managing processes. And we had this way of creating a new process called fork, which rather than creating a process from a particular program we wanted to run, it cloned the current process. So we just created it by copying something that already existed. And we called the new process when we did fork a child process and the original a parent. And the way fork worked is when we made a clone, well, if we did nothing, we just execute the same program twice. So to differentiate our parent and our child, we return different values from fork depending on whether we were in the parent or the child. And we chose to turn the child process ID in the parent, which the parent process couldn't really figure out otherwise, and return 0 in the child just as sort of an indicator that you're not in the parent process. Now, this takes care of starting a new process, but usually, you know, the cases we think of for starting a new process are we want to run something else. We don't want to keep writing the current program, but in a slightly different way. So we have this exec call, which runs a different program. It doesn't create a new process, it runs a different program in the same process. So we have this process control block that has information about our current process, what memory it has allocated, and so on. And we'll replace that with a different process. Sorry, a different program. But it's the same process control block, but a different program's information. So we're going to keep the same, as we'll learn, open files. We're going to see the same process ID, but we're going to replace the information that determines what program is running in that process, which is basically the memory, the current registers. We're going to replace them with some new program, which we're going to start at basically main. And we also talked about wait PID. So we could speak new processes, we could spawn other programs in them, but we need some way of waiting for them to finish. So if we think of implementing your command line, then if I type a command, I don't get another command prompt until that command finishes. So how do I, you know, not print that command prompt too early? Well, wait PID lets us wait for a child process to finish, and it also tells us how it finished, whether it exited, if it exited, what number was passed to exit, or if it terminated for some other reason, like a seg fault or control C. Those are things we covered last time. Questions about these things we covered last time? Yes? So the question is, what happens with wait PID if I pass a PID that isn't actually a child PID? So if it's not the special number -1, which means any child, then it's going to fail. And wait PID returns a value which is the child it waited for, or if there's an error, -1. So it would return -1. And there's a special error no variable you can check for the reason of the failure, and there's this code for that process isn't actually your child process. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Yes. Can you wait for a process that isn't your child process? Can you wait for a process that isn't your child process? Not with wait PID, without doing something that's not part of POSIX. So in POSIX, if you went to wait for a process and it's not your child process, you're out of luck. On Linux, there's probably a way of doing it, but it's not going to be portable. Other questions? Okay, so when we finished up, we were looking at how wait PID works. And the typical timeline is that, you know, you call fork, you make a new process. That process will do something. Most commonly, it will exec to run a different program. That different program will eventually finish up and hopefully exit normally. And when we call wait PID, you know, we call wait PID before the program finishes, and wait PID returns after that exit happens with the information from the exit. Now, when we talked about how fork work in general, we mentioned, well, we have two programs running, quote unquote, at the same time, and we don't really know whether the OS is going to run one or the other in what order and how often. So it could be the case that we call fork and the OS decides to run the child process much faster or much more often than the parent, and the parent doesn't get to call wait PID until the child finishes. And that might seem like a problem. It's not. Wait PID is going to be able to wait for things that have already finished as long as you just wait exactly once. So this situation is designed to work, and it needs to, or else we wouldn't really have a way of safely using it for programs that might terminate quickly, which happens all the time. You run like ls, and maybe sometimes you get unlucky and you don't call wait PID till finish. That's not going to be a problem, because the OS is going to remember that the program finished and retrieve what happened in exit, even though you didn't call wait PID in time. That's fine. Yes? Question, could in between the time the child process exits and we call wait PID, could another process get the same PID? No, that is prohibited. That answer your question? Okay. So that shows our typical use of wait PID. And you can also use wait PID with, say, multiple child processes. So one way you could do this is you could have a parent which forks twice, and let's say we choose to execute a program in both child processes. In this case, I've chosen to wait for the first one first, so this wait needs to wait a little bit until the exit happens, and then I wait for the second one, and the operating system says, oh, that already exited, I don't actually need to wait, I'll just give you what happened. Yes? So the question is, I said when the child process is finished, it's still not possible for another process to take the same PID? Yes, until it's waited for. That answer your question? This question, as soon as the wait happens, the PID is free? Yes. Yes. So question, when I call for the fork the second time, do I need to make a fork in the first child process?
I'm like, when you call the fork second time, how does the system know that you're calling
for the fork for the first time? So how does the system know that this, question is, how does the OS know that this fork call only applies to the parent process and not to our first child process? And the answer is that the code I'm going to write is going to have some sort of, you know, if statement that only happens in the parent, where the second fork call is, or some other sort of flow control. I'm not going to execute a call to fork in the case where the first fork told me I was in the child process. And how would I know I was in the child process? Because the first fork would have returned zero. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. So since we know about fork and exec, here I have a little bit of code that uses the echo command, which prints out its arguments. My question is, what are the possible outputs? Of these options. Like, there might be some additional possible outputs, but we're not concerned about them. You can check with your neighbor, see if you agree. This is assuming fork and execv don't fail. Assuming execv doesn't fail is important, so that means that, you know, in a quote-unquote real version of this, we'd want to put some error handling code after execv so we don't keep going. Okay, who would like some more time? Okay, so people. Okay, who would like some more time now? Okay, seems like not enough people are. Thank you. Okay, so let's see what people think now. So who thinks just A? Okay, just B? Okay, just C? D, which is both A and B? Both A and C? Okay. All of the above, so A, B, and C? And something else, that neither A, B, or C are possible. Okay, so most people said A and C, which is what the answer I think is correct. So what happens here is we're running our parent process. We call fork the first time when I equals 0. And in this case, in the child process, we have args set to echo L1, and we exec. So that's what happens in the child process. We'll get back to what happens in the child process later, after the exec. In the parent process, in the meanwhile, we go to the next iteration of the loop. Why don't we do the exec stuff? Because PIDs of I is not going to be 0. It's going to be the parent process ID of the first child process. Then we call fork when I equals 1, and that second child is going to call echo L2. I should have a clearer 2. And exec that. And then in the parent process, well, PIDs of 1 is not going to be 0 because fork will have returned the process ID of the second child. So then we go back to this for loop here in the parent, which is going to wait for the first child. And then it's going to wait for the second. Now, remember from what I just showed you, the when we wait for them doesn't determine when they actually finish. It's just going to wait for them to finish. And we have two child processes, one of which wants to print out L1, another which wants to print out L2. And they're going to execute in some order, and we don't know what, because it depends on like when timers go off. And if we have multi-core, like the relative speeds of our cores, we don't know exactly when what will happen when. So both A and C are possible. Either the first child could manage to print first, or the second. It just depends on exactly what the timing is of when things run, what other things are running that might slow them down, and so on. And when we wait for them, that's not going to change when they print things out. That the wait calls are only going to return sometime after they've already printed out. Yes?
Could it be possible that you only get L printed and then switch to the other program and another L and then go back?
Question, would it be possible that we have some interleave printing, like LL from switching between the programs? Depending on exactly how echo is implemented, yes. Question?
I understand this because we're using exec, but if we don't use exec to replace the program, what will happen for the for loop? Will the program continue the for loop?
So the question is, if this for loop didn't contain exec, what would happen? Well, in that case, our child process would continue the for loop. So this first child, rather than execing, would go to the top of this for loop with I equals 1 and call fork again. And we'd have another child process that was a child of the first child process. We might call it a grandchild process. Does that answer your question?
So would that cause a segment fault?
Question, would that cause a segmentation fault? No, it's perfectly legal, just possibly not intended. Back there?
Yeah.
The question is, why do I have these new line characters? Why isn't there a new line character after L2? There would be. I just didn't write that. Okay. Yes?
Why don't the child processes, when they return out of the exec V, why don't they then go back up to top of
the? So the question is, when the child process is exec V, why don't they go back? So remember, exec V replaces the current program with a different one. So there's nothing to go back to after exec V happens successfully. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
So would I be correct in thinking that like wait PID just like waits for it to finish but has no actual effect on when it finishes?
question, would you be correct in thinking that wait PID waits for it to finish, but it doesn't like prioritize it finishing? So POSIX doesn't specify anything about the timing of processes, so it would be valid for an OS to prioritize it finishing, but it would be unusual and certainly not required. Yes? Question is, why are we running echo? What's confusing about why we're running echo? So this execb is what runs echo. And what were you expecting to be different if we were running echo? Okay. Other, yes. So the question is, do both of the forks happen in the parent, or do some of them happen in the child? In this case, they both happen in the parent, and that's just because after forking, we always make sure the child does something that doesn't let it fork again, which is execv.
The fork would return you, like basically, the fork would put the child at that
interval. So question is, after the fork returns, the child is at this if statement? Yeah, as is the parent. Yeah, and if we didn't have this if statement or the if statement was different, it would be the case that the child would fork, but that's not how we wrote this code, and that's typically not what code that uses fork will do, though it could. Yeah?
What are the contents of bin echo? Is that just C code?
Question, what are the contents of bin echo? Bin echo is a file that was generated by a compiler, most likely. Yeah? The question is, when wait PID happens, does the program just halt? If the other programs haven't finished yet, yes. If not, wait PID will retrieve the exit status and return. In this case, it would retrieve the exit status and then discard it because the second argument is null. Does that answer your question?
Sorry, what's the second argument?
The second argument is where to put the status information. In this case, we're discarding it because we passed null. Could we just get rid of the wait PID? So if we could, it's good practice to do this waiting, partly because the OS will track processes until you wait for them, just because it needs to keep their exit status around in case you retrieve it. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Yeah. In what case could L2 be first? When we start this first child, the OS could decide not to run it for a while because there's other things to do. Or it could decide to run it on a core that's just really slow. Yeah. Question, does when the L1 is printed have something to do with the wait PID? No, unrelated to that. Would happen even if we didn't wait PID. Yes?
How does
exec print forking the child? When the exec is successful, which we assume, then it never returns because we replace the current program with something else. There's nothing left to return to. Yes?
Never mind, I just answered it, sorry.
Okay. Okay, so talked about running programs. So talk a little about shells, which if you've looked ahead is our next assignment. So shells are programs that allow users, like a person at a keyboard or a mouse, to run applications. So they're a user's wrapper for the process management function. So like you don't write code that does work, you run a command on the command line or double click something, so on. And the upcoming homework is to make a simple shell. And generally, I would use the term shell to include like graphical shells, like the OS X Finder or Windows Explorer, and other types of command lines. But we're going to talk about the POSIX command line, the one that's specified as the standard interface. And it supports a bunch of features, some of which you may or may not have used. So one thing it does is it searches for programs. You type a command like ls to list files. There's a program called ls. It's not located in the current directory as ls most of the time. So when you type ls, the shell is going to be responsible for figuring out where ls is, and the similar for other commands, like say make. Like there's not a make program in the current directory, there's somewhere else that's found. And generally what POSIX does is there's a convention about where programs are. And the convention POSIX has chosen is that there's this environment variable called path. What is an environment variable? So every program, in addition to arguments, has this list of key value pairs associated with it. Every process, I should say. This is a list of key value pairs. And the path one specifies a value that's a list of directories and shells on POSIX, just by convention. They don't have to, you know, look through all those directories and find programs on them. And one way you could do this is you could, when you need to exec via program, you just try all the directories until it works. Or if it doesn't work, you print not found. Shells also support running things in the background. So you might have used this ampersand, which doesn't wait for the program to finish. But that's actually, a lot of that's easy to implement because the main thing we're doing is not calling wait PID right away. So it's mostly not doing something that implements running something in the background. Another feature we're going to talk more about, well, two of these, redirection and pipelines, is something we're going to have to implement in our upcoming assignment, just to write a simple shell. So redirection is that I can run a program, and rather than having the program output to the terminal, I can have it output to a text file. Or rather than having it read its input from the terminal, I can have it read its input from some file. And there's also pipelines, which is rather than having a program's output go to a file or the terminal, I can have it go to be the input to another program. So in this example, I would take the output of some program and pass it through the program called sumFilter, and I would see sumFilter's output only. So questions about these shell features? Yes? Question, I can explain the difference between redirection and pipelining. So the main difference is that the thing we're sending the output to is a program. Another difference is that, of course, this pipeline operation, I'm changing the output of one program and the input of another all at once. Another thing is that there shouldn't actually be a temporary file involved. That if some program produces a very large amount of output, I don't want this to write like a gigabyte to my disk. I want it to be sent as is, and we'll have a mechanism for doing that we'll talk about later. Does that answer your question? Yes? Question, what's the difference between shell and kernel? So this shell is just a program that runs in user mode that you could replace with other things. And we'll see, because we're going to be writing one, and because we've learned that, oh, there's this thing called fork and execv and wait PID, which can implement a lot of these features. And we'll learn there's also some things to implement these redirection and pipelining features too. Does that answer your question?
And the kernel is the one that's actually the whole operating system.
So the kernel is the part which runs with extra privileges. Okay. Yes? Question, is the pipe character like ls, a program that's stored somewhere? No. So the pipe character and this greater than and less than character, these are going to be features of our shell program, our program that runs other programs.
So it's more like a defined statement or something like
that? So it's more like a defined statement. So I would consider it's an operator, you know, kind of like equals, right, in C or C++, right? It's something that has special meaning in our interpreter for commands. Whereas the normal thing our interpreter does is look for programs, but those characters have special meaning and will be treated specially. Yes?
So is it illegal to do redirection into a program and to pipeline into a file?
So the question is, can I not do redirection into a program or pipelining file? So if I use this pipe and then output.txt, I'd be telling the shell I want to run a program called output.txt. which could be the name of a program, but probably you made a mistake. And similarly, if I redirect into a file .sumfilter, I'm saying I want to overwrite the file sumfilter, even though it might be a program. Does that answer your question? And all the way back there?
I was gonna ask something
too. Okay. So as I mentioned, we have a shell assignment. So your shell assignment is to implement a simple shell that does redirection and pipelining for Linux or another POSIX system. So not for XV6, because XV6 doesn't implement a full featured all the things we need. Your shell will probably work on things like OSX and FreeBSD and other Unix-like OSs, but our tests assume Linux in some ways because there's some things we want to test that are a little tricky to test otherwise. And your shell's gonna do a couple things that the shell you're used to, what you get when you like SSH into one of the department machines, doesn't do. One of these is that it's gonna print the exit code of every program that's run, I should say, I have in the pipeline or run in general. So it's only gonna print all the exit codes of everything, which usually you're not used to that happening. And we're gonna have simplified parsing. So with a normal shell, you can like write a pipe character immediately followed by the command. You don't like have to put white space in between. We're gonna assume that you separate all those things with white space for both pipes and redirections that like around the greater than, less than, and pipe, you have white space. And this is just so you can split things by white space rather than needing to do something more complicated, because this is a class about like doing processes, not about text parsing. So questions about the assignment generally before we go on to, well, thinking about what things we need to know about how files work to do redirection. Yes. So question, why do I say not XV6? So XV6 doesn't implement fully featured versions of some of the Unix calls like WakePID. Or some things we'll learn about later for files, so you couldn't really write the same shell for XV6. Also, our template is in C++, which most of you will find more convenient because you have like a string class, and that would definitely not be an option in XV6, and I think that makes the assignment a lot better for everyone. Okay, so we're gonna talk about files a bit, and then POSIX sort of has this philosophy that quote unquote everything, maybe not quite everything, but a lot of things are represented as files. Files are how we talk to devices, like terminals, printers. How we deal with quote-unquote regular files, things stored on disk or SSDs. How we do networking, how we talk to other machines. It's gonna look like a file. Also, how we communicate with other programs on the same machine. They have this one interface with the basic operations being something like open, read, write, we've seen write. There's also a read, and close. And this one interface, we have these common calls and these common attributes that when we use this file interface, we always have some sort of open operation before we can use a file. And this is where the OS says, can you actually use that device or thing on disk? That's decided when you open it. You don't like try to write a file and then get permission denied as you're writing it, you get permission denied when you open it. It's byte-oriented, so read and write work in bytes, even though the real thing you're talking to might not work that way. Like networks, you typically don't send one byte at a time. Hard drives don't work one byte at a time, but that's the interface we're gonna provide across all these different types of devices. And there's this explicit close operation that when you're done with a file, you can throw it away by closing it. So we're gonna talk about this look interface for files that's the one that would typically be implemented by the kernel and have system calls, like we saw in XV6, there's a write system call. There's gonna be a read and an open and a close system call, as you might guess, in a typical Unix system. And you might say, wait a moment, that's not how I used files. I typically used like cn or scanf or cout and printf. And how does this stuff we're gonna learn about interact with that, or is it just different? And Well, CN and scanf are typically implemented using read. And cout and printf are typically implemented using write. So these are what goes underneath those more friendly interfaces like cout. We're going to talk about how read and write work. I would like to mention that if you're using read and write, you basically should not also use cout and cn, or scanf and printf, because cn and cout kind of expect to be the only person using the file. And they'll do things like read a bunch of characters and only return some of them to you right away, save them the rest for later. Or not write right away, but write when they have enough to write to do fewer calls to write because that's a lot faster. So confusing things will happen if you try to mix these more convenient library interfaces with the low-level read and write we'll be talking about. So questions about standard I.O., I.O. streams versus our low-level calls. And part of what we deal with files is we have this file system abstraction. That's typically the files you're used to, where we have what we call our regular files, which are named collection of bytes that stick around, that have permanent storage, that aren't like our terminal. And we also have directories with this hierarchical naming. On Unix, the names, sort of the root is this special directory called slash, and we have slash separated names for the hierarchy starting with that. So there's the root is slash, and there's a net directory in there, which contains a ZF14 directory, and so on. And I have in the slide that directories mostly contain regular files or other directories, but they could contain some other types of special files, which we probably won't talk about for quite a while. Okay, so I mentioned there's an open call. So this is the open call that POSIX specifies. This is what might be used to implement things you've seen like fopen or like an open function in Python. So it takes a path to a file and some flags and this optional mode. So the path is the file name, and it can either be what's called an absolute path, which starts with a slash, which indicates starting with the root central directory, or a relative path, which is relative to the directory you're currently in, which is called the current working directory, the one you'd set in a shell by using the cd command. So questions on the path? Yes. The question is that you've used like something like this to represent the file foo in my home directory. Is this supported by POSIX? No, not in the open function. It's supported by shells in POSIX, but not by the actual lower level calls like open. So you can open a file, and open returns an int. You might say, wait a moment, how do I use that to access a file? So the return value is what we'll call a file descriptor. And it's an index into a table that's kept for each process. So part of the process control block is going to be this array of what we'll call open file descriptions. And this is going to return an index into that table, or if we have some problem opening the file, we'll return -1. And our read system call and our write system call will take one of these table indexes. So in XV6, there's this, in fact, this array of struct file stars, which is that table. And it has in XV6 a fixed size. And file descriptor 0 is index 0, file descriptor 1 is index 1, and so on. So we saw write comp 1, that's going to access index 1 of this array. And these are array of pointers, so you can, in fact, have the same open file shared between multiple processes, or multiple entries of the same array point to the same open file description. And you might say, what if a file's not open? Then it's going to be an XV6, it's a null pointer. Question? Yeah. What are the flags? We will get to those later. And also the mode. Yes?
So what's the point, where does the pointer point to?
So question, where does this pointer point to? So there's some, so the kernel needs to allocate memory. We're going to mostly gloss over how that's managed. And there's lots of options. Like the most obvious thing would be to have something malloc-like to allocate that memory. Yes?
And is the pointer from the file to this struct or the other way?
So the question is the pointer from the file to the struct. So this struct proc is our process control block. This would be the thing we retrieve with my proc. And it contains pointers to the open file descriptions. And our open file descriptions, this is what XV6 tracks for them. So it tracks a type of file, whether it's a pipe, which is a special file we'll talk about later to talk to another process, or a normal file, which they call an inode for reasons we'll learn when we talk about how file systems work. So this is what XV6 chose to do. You might say other designs for this might be like have a class with subclasses for each type of file or something like that, but XV6 is written in C, so they didn't do that. It has a reference count. So you might, I told you that we could have like multiple pointers to the same open file description, and we have to keep track of when we can free it. XV6 does this by keeping track of how many pointers there are to it in this ref variable. And when it goes to zero, they free it. We have this readable and writable Boolean, which they use a care for instead of a bool, because there's no bool type in C in the 1990s. And this is going to be is reading aloud, is writing aloud. And this is going to be based on our flags to open. So when we looked at the flags to open my examples, our flags indicated whether we were asking to read, to write, to do both, and also some other things like whether we wanted to create a new file or not. Yes? So what is... So what question is, what is this O underscore thing? These are just constants. These are just actually going to be constant numbers because the flags variable is an int. So there's constants defined in the header file. And in particular, the header file is going to be a header file called fctl.h. Just defines those as numbers. Does that answer your question? So, what do these flags mean? So you can find the documentation in the open manual page. This is read only. This here is write only, create if it doesn't exist, and truncate if it does exist. Yes? Question, is this the convention for other operating systems? This is the POSIX convention. So all the Unix-like OSs, XV6, Linux, OS X, follow this at the lower level file calls. Yes, back there? So question, how do you get the pointer to the descriptor to return an integer? So the return value to open is this zero here. It's the index into the array. And that's what the process is going to use. Getting the pointer, when the system call runs, it's going to look up in this array based on the index that was passed in. So when we call read or write, we're going to pass in an index. The RAID implementation is going to access this array at that index. Does that answer your question?
When is that set up?
When is this array element set up? Open is going to set it. And some other things we'll talk about later. Yes?
How do you determine the size of the array?
How do you determine the size of the array? So XV6 has chosen to make it a constant that they just chose. If you don't like that, you can make it dynamically allocated in some way, like have configuration flags. You can allocative on demand. POSIX doesn't actually say, and real OSs vary. Real Unix variants vary in this. Yeah? Sorry, isn't this? So isn't this here a separate array that XV6 had to create? Yes? Absolutely. Yeah?
For those integer variables specifying different modes that you can open the file in, right, is it just like a bitwise OR that applies all?
Question, are the flags just a bitwise OR? Yes. Okay. And also I should mention this mode here. This mode specifies the permissions, like who can access the file if a new one is created. For the most part, we're not going to talk about that until really late in the semester. Yes, we're back.
Besides the flag, where is the information
like,
the file descriptor found?
So the file question, where is the information the file descriptor found? So in XV6, we have this array that points to these structs. And after open, this is the information the OS tracks. So we mentioned our type of file, how many other things have this exact version of the file open, whether read and writing is allowed, and also information about a pointer to information about the actual file, you know, depending on the type of file. And also an offset, which is where we are in the file. Yes, way back there. Question, how can child parent share the same pointer? Again, how can they share the same pointer? So in XV6, this is an array of pointers. We just copy the array without copying what the pointers point to. And increment the refs to make us not delete things when we're not supposed to. Okay, so we have this array of file descriptor, of open file descriptions, I should say. And we call indexes this array a file descriptor. And POSIX has this convention of some special file descriptor, meaning some special indexes. And their convention is index 0 is standard input, index 1 is standard output, index 2 is standard error. And if you don't like memorizing those numbers, the POSIX header file, unistandard.h, defines the constants standard out file now, standard in file now, standard error file now for these. Now you might say, wait a moment, we can't choose what number like open assigns, so how is this actually useful except if we're already like running? Because remember, a goal we have is we want to like change where the output of a program goes. So what we're going to want to do is we're going to want to run a program with standard output pointing to a file. That's how we're going to implement. This redirection operation is that we're going to have standard out open to output.txt instead of wherever it was. Or for their input redirection, we're going to have standard in file descriptor 0 open to input.txt instead of wherever it was. And it seems like at this point, we have what we need to do that except when we call open, it assigns a new array index. It doesn't just give us 0 or 1. So we need some way of dealing with that. And we'll have a solution to that in a bit. But first, I'd like to finish talking about our sort of basic file descriptor manipulations. We also have close. So close closes a file descriptor. It deallocates an array index. And I mentioned that we could have multiple copies of the pointer to the open file description. So we can have two different file descriptors, like 0 and 1, could refer to the same open file description. Closing just deallocates the array index. Does the open file description go away? Only if it doesn't have any pointers to it anymore. So a common example would be that when we fork, I mentioned we just have the same pointers to the same open files. Closing in the parent process won't affect the child process because we're not going to get rid of that open file because there's still a pointer to it. Yes. How does it not affect the parent process and the child process? So it affects the process you're calling it from, but if we think of XV6, we're just going to decrement this ref count, reference count, and we're going to say, oh, someone still has a pointer to this. Let's not actually like free this struct file.
So they have the same, like, do they have different pointers? Or
question, do they have different pointers? They have, in XV6, they have literally a pointer to the same thing. Other questions? Okay, so we have close. Close actually returns whether it succeeds or fails. You might say, how can closing fail? So an example is if sometimes when you write to a file, the OS doesn't actually write to disk right away. If you call close, it will try to finish that for you, and if it doesn't work, then it will return an error. So yes, close can fail. Okay, so let's get back to redirection. So we mentioned we want to do this redirection operation where we change where input or output comes from and make it come from, say, a file we open. And you mentioned the problem we have is that, you know, we can open a new file, but we can't make it like be file descriptor 0 or 1 or 2, one of those special ones that are used for input or output just by convention. But otherwise, we have what we need. So what we're going to do is we're going to be, you know, running a program, and we're going to call exec, and exec, well, it changes what the program running, but it doesn't change or open a file. So, you know, if we exec a program, and it's taking input from our current terminal, it still takes input from the same place, because exec doesn't change that array of open file descriptions. It's left the same. So what we're going to want to do is we're going to want to fork, which is going to copy our list of open files. And typically, after forking, we have pointers to the same two open file descriptions for standard in and standard out. And what we want to do is, sometime after we fork, we can change our standard out in the child process to point somewhere else. And we can leave the parent process the same, which is going to be useful because we want our shell to continue outputting its prompts and so on normally for future commands. So sometime after forking in the child process and before forking the child process and before the child process execs, we're going to have the child process edit where its standard out goes to implement this redirection operation. Questions? About this. So sort of our outline is going to be, we're going to call fork. That's going to create a child process where we're going to do some open some new files operation and then exec. And our parent, we're just going to wait for the child process most likely. So we're going to need some way of, you know, open the files to redirect and making them standard out, error, input, whatever we want to do. And our mechanism for doing that is going to be this new library called dupe2. We'll look at what that looks like in a bit. So our redirection, we're going to open, in this case, output.txt for writing, and we're going to get a new file descriptor. That new file descriptor is not going to be file descriptor 1. Why not? Because, well, it's a new one, and file descriptor 1's already in use. And then we're going to make that number 1 with this dupe2 call. And basically what we want to do is we want to, if we were in the kernel, we could just say ofile index 1 equals ofile of what we just opened. But we can't do that in the kernel. So there's going to be a system call to request that operation, and that system call is going to be through this dupe2 library function. And the way dupe2 works is we specify we want what file descriptor to become what. So from this first thing becomes the second thing. Okay, so that's how we do it. You might say, wait a moment, aren't we overwriting an existing pointer? Juke2 can't takes care of that, so it will close the thing we're overwriting for us. It will deallocate that array index as part of this process. Yes?
You're just given the name of some file, like output.txt, for example, how do we determine the file descriptor?
Question, if we're given the name of some file, like output.txt, how do we determine the file descriptor? You open a file descriptor. So here's our full example of code. So I've done a little extra work to, I called fflush to make sure printf prints everything out, writes everything out before we change where standard out goes. Then I open a file, see if it works. If it doesn't work, I do something about that. And I got a new file descriptor, which is not going to be the standard out number. So I make it the standard out number. And then I close the original. So if we think of our array of open files, this is doing a file of standard out. File no equals o file of fd, and this close operation is doing o file open file of fd equals null. So what I end up with is I've assigned standard outs index to point to an opening of output.txt, and I don't have any other ones left over. I've cleaned up everything else I did. Question back there? So question is, how would I restore standard out? So in this case, I can't do that because I've forgotten where standard out goes. If I wanted to do that, one option would be that I could use dupe2 or a similar call called dupe, which is basically dupe2, but it makes up a new number, to make a copy of standard out and then dupe2 it back later. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
What does dupe2 stand for?
So the original call dupe makes a copy of a file descriptor with a new number. So dupe2 is the two argument version of that, basically. Yes? Question, are we using a bitwise OR operator on their flags? Yes, that is the convention for how you pass multiple types of different flags. Yes, over there.
If write itself to the file descriptor anyway, why can't we just write directly to the open file and have to, you know, swap it off?
So the question is, why do we have to make it standard out? Why can't we just tell the program to write to FD instead of standard out? And that's just because we have this convention that one is where you write output to when you write programs, and if we're thinking of a program like LS or Echo or a program you wrote like your Hello World program, you just don't have any way of specifying a different number. Does that answer your question? Yeah?
So maybe you're saying that in order to see where standard out was,
so the question, if I wanted to say where standard out was with something like dupe, you know, where it would be stored in the operating system, so what dupe does, dupe x is basically the same as dupe2x and some new number. So we're just allocating an entry in our open file or, array with a new number to store it. Does that answer your question? So question, it seems like a program in user mode can completely erase where standard out is. Yes, but it's doing it for its process's array of open files. It doesn't affect any of the other ones. So that's fine. You can make it so you can't out it. That answer your question? Okay. Other questions? So that's our open, dupe, close, and dupe2 such. So we have our open operation, sort of allocates an entry in this array of pointers, dupe2 does an assignment, close sets one to null, and fork makes a full copy of all the pointers. questions about these operations? Okay, so we've seen open, close, and we've seen ways of manipulating file descriptors. I'd like to talk briefly about read and write. So we've seen read and write before, very briefly. We've seen write a little less briefly. So they take a file descriptor. So that's an index into that array of open files. They take a buffer, which is just something that holds bytes, and a number of bytes, and they return a value. The value they return is how many bytes were read or written. SIC is just a type that can hold a negative number. If they have an error, they return negative one. Error can be like, you tried to write to a file that isn't open. Like, I looked up that index in the array of open files and it was null. It's going to return negative one. Or it could be something like, you're trying to write to the network and the network got disconnected. It's going to return negative one. And they return the number of bytes read or written. So usually that would be the number of bytes you asked to read or write, but sometimes not. Sometimes something will fail. Sometimes you'll ask to read 1,000 bytes from a file that only has 10, and you'll get a lower number. And read can return 0, and that has the special meaning of end of file. So if you try to read past the end of file, it's not an error, it returns 0. So the way you might imagine read being used, this is reading one byte at a time. We can also read more than one byte, but I'll just do the simplest version. Is I pass a pointer to a place to store my one byte, ask to read one byte, and while I'm getting one byte, I'm just appending it to a string. And then I see if I reach the end of file or got an error at the end. And that's why I stopped my reading loop. Yes? Question, what's a buffer? Just something that holds data. Other questions? And we've also seen our write. Okay, so let's do this little exercise, and then we'll talk briefly about pipes. So here, I'm opening a file output.txt for writing, creating a file if needed, and truncating it if it already exists. And I'm writing to that file descriptor A. And then I'm doing my to operation, which remember is from comma to. So it does O file of to equals O file of from to assign 100 with standard out file now is from to 100, then FD to standard out file now. And I'm writing this B standard out, C to FD, closing FD, writing D to standard out, and E to 100. And I'm asking you to assume 100 isn't used, so 100 is just an index that I can freely use. And assume none of the opens or such fail, which they obviously could, like, if I'm out of space or something. Question is, what should we see in output.txt? Okay, who likes more time? Okay, so who thinks option A is the best answer? Thinks option B is the best answer? Okay, option C, option D, and option E, that none of these are what's gonna happen. Okay, so we have a plurality on B, which is what I agree with. So the way I figure this out is I say, initially, our standard out goes to probably the terminal. FD, after this first line, goes to output the text file. And 100 doesn't go to anything. Then we write A to output.txt. So that's I'll accumulate our answer. And then we do this dupe to here. And to do that, we're gonna take standard out. Wherever that points, that's going to be where 100 points. So instead of 100 pointing to none, we're going to copy where standard out points, so it's going to point to the terminal. Then I do FD, standard out. That's our next line. So instead of standard out pointing wherever standard out points, it's going to point where FD points, so it's going to point to the text file. Then I write to standard out, I look up where standard out goes, it goes to the text file. I write to FD, I look up where FD goes, it goes to the text file. So I got my BC in the text file. Then I close FD. What that does is it makes FD go to none. It doesn't affect the other indices in the array. So they still point to output points to, standard out points to the text file, 100 points to the terminal. Then I write to standard out, still points to the text file, that's where I get my D. I write to 100, that points to the terminal, so I'm going to see E on my terminal. Questions on how I figured this out? No. Yes, back there. Can I explain the arguments of 2? It's from comma 2. So we assign index of the 2 argument to point to the from argument. Does that answer your question? Yes.
I'm not sure if you answered this already, but the right 100E, is that just writing it to the terminal? So it would
the question is the right 100E just writing it to the terminal? Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Can you explain one more time, like, where, so there's like this array that has, like, on right now, you know, for example, it's got like standard out on one side and out on the other, and FD on one side. Is that array, like, what exactly is that array? Is it for each? Like context or?
Question is, the how many instances of this array? There's one for each process.
Okay.
It's part of the process control block.
Okay. And that's the file descriptor table? Is that what this
that's is? That's the file, yeah, that is, would be the file descriptor table, yes. Back there?
How do you know which file descriptors are in use right now? Like, say, standard
output. How do I know which file descriptors are in use right now? I would need more information. In this question, I'm telling you to assume 100 is not in use initially, which is why we can get away with it. Otherwise, you need to do something else. The most common way on POSIX is that the dupe call is like dupe 2, but it finds a number that's free for you. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Other questions? Yep. Question, does the file standard out automatically point to terminal by the default? I was assuming it did, because that's typically how your shell would set it up. So what does file now stand for? This standard out file now, this is the constant 1. Because they just chose a number to represent normal output. And they had to choose a number for it, they chose 1.
So that represents
printing to the default output. Which is usually a terminal, but might be something else. Yes?
And so the fact that FD points to output.txt, does that mean the data
the question is, since FD points to output.txt, does that mean that the array of open file descriptions for FD points to output.txt? It points to metadata about output.txt. So output.txt is probably like stored on disk, which we can't actually point to, but we'll learn exactly how that works later. Yeah. What happens if I write E to... What if it happens if I write E comma 2? In that case, I'd be writing E in a the null terminator of the string E. And I write 2 bytes, one of them a null character. Okay. So I mentioned before we finish up, I'm going to talk briefly about pipes, which we're going to, I guess, need to finish up next time, which is the sort of second big part of the assignment. So there's a special kind of file that POSIX makes called pipes. So unlike regular files, which kind of store information, pipes just pass through information. And you put bytes in one end of a pipe, and you get bytes out of the other end. And there's a library called pipe, which makes them. And it makes it by giving you 2 file descriptors, one for the read end of the pipe and one for the write end of the pipe. And so it takes an array to fill in. So in this case, I have this array of 2 file descriptors that it fills in. And I can write to the read end. And when I do that, I can later on read it from the write end. And this is typically how shells implement that pipeline operation. That they'll set up one of the processes to write to the write end of a pipe as its default output, and the other to read from the read end of the pipe as its default input. So when one process writes and the other reads, the information will pass from that one process to the other. And we'll look at how pipes work in more detail next time. But you see the basics here, and you can guess we're going to want to do the same sort of redirection thing that we did with normal files with these pipes.